Overturning Roe v. Wade was only the first battle in the fight for life in America, and now it continues in the states. You could look at the example of Georgia. Timothy Head is the executive director of the Faith and Freedom Coalition, and he's a frequent guest right here on Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and Tim, it's great to have you back on the program. Thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you so much, Jerry, for having me as always, and also for talking about these important issues like this.
Yes, and we're really talking here about the issue of abortion. And I'll tell you what, before we get into it, I would like you to set a little bit of civics education for us, okay? This is the United States of America. The founders of America basically said, we're going to go ahead and create this union of these 13 different states and then create a national government. In our day, it seems as if sometimes the national government, the federal government, is such that people forget that there is such a thing as all these different states. And then when you deal with issues like abortion, which are very controversial, different states have different views. But talk a little bit about civics and the founders of America, and then we'll get directly into abortion and Roe v. Wade, et cetera.
Well, that's a great point, Jerry. You know, and one of the interesting things that when you kind of study the Supreme Court and the Constitution in its original founding, and then also kind of supplemental, contemporaneous documents from the late 1770s and the early up until like the early 1800s. Legal and even media documents would say the United States are doing thus and such. So today we say the United States is doing thus and such. Truly, in kind of even down to our vocabulary, they understood that the United States was a collection, truly a confederation of individual sovereign states that had kind of certain agreed upon shared responsibilities in the federal government, like minting currency or, you know, regulating transportation and commerce between the states, but not actually telling the states what to do, certainly dictating state policy. So it took almost 100 years, really truly, until like the 1850s and 60s before we saw more of that kind of federal national kind of approach to state to governing and to restricting or regulating state policy.
Okay, and of course the Constitution is the key to understanding what the Founding Fathers wanted us to live by when it comes to, you know, America. And of course it was all predicated on the Declaration of Independence, which says that our rights come from God. Well, Roe v. Wade used the Constitution and said, now what we're going to do is have abortion on demand throughout the whole country, despite different laws in different states related to the subject of abortion. Roe v. Wade, by the way, was a 1973 Supreme Court decision. It had a companion decision called Doe v. Bolton, and although Roe went into great length saying, we're only talking about the first trimester of abortion, the companion decision, Doe v. Bolton, basically opened the door for second and third trimester abortions. So, give us a little context here in terms of Roe v. Wade and the Constitution, because basically the Supreme Court said this year, no, Roe v. Wade wasn't constitutional.
Well, so the way that that the interpretation of the Constitution is supposed to happen, and again, this was it's ebbed and flowed, you know, over the course of 250 almost years now in the United States, but the original design and kind of function of the Constitution and the Supreme Court was just truly to interpret the Constitution and to kind of like apply the specific, you know, fact pattern, the case and controversy that's before the court. But what started happening is particularly in the late early 1900s, and then we kind of saw all the way through in 1973. What you might refer to as this kind of evolution of what constitutional scholars refer to as a living constitution. So this notion in 1973 that emerged is the justice that wrote Roe and Doe that you refer to, said that within the right to privacy, there are these, the term that he used was this penumbra of rights that were kind of like effervescent. So it wasn't specifically, the originalist would say, the Supreme Court, if the framers, the founders, didn't articulate a right, it wasn't contemplated or protected by the court or by the Constitution. But this new approach found that that sort of like implied or almost like there's like this aroma, if you will, of rights that come out of this collection or potpourri within the right to privacy. And so we're going to start to discover new rights that aren't really said, spoken, or written, but they're kind of implied. And so that's where they found this, not only the right to an abortion, but also, you know, other within that penumbra are things like the right to marriage, the right to, you know, certain kind of other healthcare decisions. And so that doesn't mean that there shouldn't be healthcare rights, but it just means that those aren't contemplated or spelled out or protected in the Constitution. That means that states are welcome to, you know, provide certain rights for marriage, for abortion, for whatever. But it should be legislated by states. And hence, you know, we as I live in Georgia, you know, if you live in Florida, you should be able to vote for state representatives and state senators who either do or don't, you know, fall in line with these various rights. And so I think what we're in the process of seeing right now is a new Supreme Court that for the first time literally in 50 years, and in some ways more like 80 or 90 years, seems to be really giving strong indications that they are going to move more and more back to that original Supreme Court approach to interpreting the Constitution truly in its quote-unquote original state or as in its textual state.
Well, what's so interesting, though, too, is the pushback. I mean, you would think that, you know, the Supreme Court was, you know, doing all sorts of terrible things when you see some of the protests going on from people like AOC and some of the Hollywood types and so forth, the leftists and even the Biden administration trying to declare the overturning of Roe v. Wade as a quote-unquote national emergency. Some are basically saying, well, the Supreme Court now has no legitimacy because they overturned Roe. Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's
well,
crazy.
Which, of course, you know, there's some people that actually believe this stuff, that the people that you just enumerated there, this is an act. It's a feigned publicity stunt. The reason why they want decisions made at the Supreme Court is so they don't have to A, fight in 50 different states, and B, persuade 330 million, you know, voters across the country of the merit of, you know, of any given decision, really. What they want is they want a few, you know, think of it this way. A lot of people on the left, in order to control, their goal is to control the flow of water through a water hose, but all they want to do is just control like a 2-inch kink in the hose. Well, that's the Supreme Court, right? So all they wanted was control over the Supreme Court, and they can either set their own policy or stop other policies that they don't want. As soon as they lose control of the Supreme Court, now all of a sudden we have national emergencies and we need to, you know, expand how many justices we have on the court and, you know, protect the Supreme Court, you know, jurisprudence for their purposes. You know, this is nothing other than kind of a temper tantrum or a flailing because they lost their real kind of sacrosanct you know, temple known as their Supreme Court.
But it is interesting to think about this. If you were, let's say, Brett Kavanaugh or Amy Coney Barrett, you have to look around your shoulders. I mean, their lives could be at risk because of the way some of these people are protesting. In fact, there was even a man, the media didn't let us know about this very much, but there was a man that was actually going to attempt to take the life of Justice Kavanaugh. So this is dangerous stuff.
it's dangerous stuff, and it's very real. I mean, these aren't just sort of like hypothetical, worst case scenarios. The Secret Service actually arrested a man from Oregon, literally one block from the Kavanaugh's house about 6 weeks ago. So in his backpack, he had two guns, ammunition, a knife, and zip ties in his backpack. So he was just a couple of hundred yards away from their house when he was picked up.
Huh. Okay, so now that the Supreme Court has overturned Roe v. Wade, basically what they've done is they've said, okay, we're giving you, the people of the United States of America, we the people, the right to decide on this, you know, very important issue of abortion through your state representative. So in effect, the Supreme Court's decision, Dobbs, was a very pro-democracy type decision, although it's being presented as, you know, virtually anything but. But what's the result now of Dobbs v. Jackson and Roe v. Wade being overturned through Dobbs v. Jackson?
Sure, good question. So by striking Roe versus Wade and its progeny known as the Casey decision in the early 1990s, it does throw the decision back to states. Since the 1970s, there are 13 states that have had laws on the books that what are referred to as trigger laws, that basically the legislature doesn't have to act. Just simply this court decision immediately or automatically legally triggers different states, for instance, Missouri, that it just triggers their 1972 abortion statute, which was highly restrictive. So there are 13 states that have already triggered their pre-Roe state statute. There are three states right now, even last week and this week, that are meeting in a special session in Indiana, West Virginia, and South Carolina, that are all debating in their state capitals, you know, what their new state law will be. And then in a handful of states, like the state of Georgia, the state legislature passed a bill last year, 2021, that had been was sued and enjoined in its effectuation. And when the Supreme Court issued its decision a few weeks ago, the appellate court, so the 11th Circuit, which covers Georgia and other states, basically released, they voided the injunction and are now allowing the Georgia heartbeat bill, which essentially bans abortions basically before roughly 6 weeks of pregnancy. So there now are six different states that have a 5.5 or 6 week abortion ban in place, like Texas and Georgia and a couple of other places, Ohio.
So in other words, if the baby's heart is beating, the unborn baby's heart is beating, then you can't do an abortion. So what, as far as the, by the way, we have only about 40 seconds left. What is the most strict law in America? I mean, what state has the most stringent anti-abortion law on the books right now?
Yeah, right now you would probably say arguably Missouri probably has the the strongest or most restrictive, and basically is no abortions for any reason. You know, other states are contemplating exceptions for like the life of the mother, you know, potentially rape, potentially incest.
Yeah.
But there are eight states that have no exceptions essentially right now.
Okay, we're out of time. Your website, please?
Our website is ffcoalition.com.
Okay, Tim Head, Executive Director of the Faith and Freedom Coalition. Thanks so much, Tim. All the best.
Absolutely. God bless.
You too.